What's up, everybody? Another episode of The Straight Cut coming to you from Westin Cigars inside the Members Lounge. I am Aaron, that is flying solo tonight, but I do have a special guest with me tonight. It is another rendition of our leadership show, and we have a guy that I've been following for a few years now on Instagram, and I guess a couple weeks ago, you posted something, and it made me just kind of like, you know what, I'm going to finally, you know, ask if you want to join for a leadership show. And I reached out to you, and I'm so glad you did, and you're really excited. And I was like, hell yeah, let's do this. So for the first quarter year of 2022 for the leadership, we have Coach Jay Bordes with us. He is the Dean of Students at Byron Station High School in Kentucky, correct?
Yes, sir. Lexington, Kentucky.
Lexington, yeah. So you're the Dean of Students there, but you're also the assistant basketball coach at a high school as well.
Yeah, I'm actually the assistant basketball coach at Tate's Creek High School, which is another high school here in Lexington. My wife is the assistant principal at Tate's Creek, and I have a son that plays on the basketball team, which, you know, one of the reasons I'm coaching there. But the head coach at Tate's Creek is it's a guy named Gerard Gay, who I actually coached really? When he was in high school.
Okay.
So it makes me feel kind of old, but yeah, I coached him, and now it's come full circle, and I help him out, which is a blessing. It's a joy.
I think a lot of us around the same age that you and I are in, we kind of got a little bit of our age slapped in our face after last week with the Super Bowl for performance. Is like, okay, if you really enjoyed that Super Bowl halftime show, like it's time to call the doctor. It's time to, you know, do a good checkup and everything. If you didn't enjoy it,
colonoscopy.
Yeah. If you didn't enjoy it, go call your parents, make sure they're doing okay at the retirement home and everything. And if you didn't know anybody who was on stage, you're too young. So,
yeah, you know, I feel like I'm 18 years old, but then when I watch game film, I see my bald spot, and I'm like, holy shit, I'm an old man.
Hey, that's why I'm holding on to this long hair as long as I can, because I've seen what my grandparents have, and I see what my dad has. So it's like when it's...
Yeah, hold on to it.
Yeah, I told Mo, I was like, if you start to see, I was like, if I'm holding on for dear life, just let me know, and it's gone. I do not want to be one of those guys.
Amen.
Well, cool. So, so we are smoking, a cigar that you, so dealer's choice, you know, when we have the guest on for what we're smoking. So we're smoking the Aging Room, Cataro Nicaragua Maestro, the number one cigar of 2019 from Cigar Aficionado. And we're saying before we got on, we've done this show for 170 shows, and I don't think we've ever done this cigar. So I'm glad we're finally getting to it. But is this your favorite cigar? Is that what you were telling me, or just one that you really like?
It is my favorite, and probably the reason I started smoking cigars a long time ago, but then I kind of quit. I went away from it, and during the pandemic early on, when we were staying home from work and just didn't have a lot to do, I picked up cigars again, and I guess it had to be around the time that Cigar Aficionado names it the cigar of the year.
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, I'm going to try it, obviously. And I just really fell in love with it. And I've smoked a bunch of them. And I just never really had one that I considered a bad one. Mm-hmm. So, it's probably my favorite cigar for sure.
Yeah, I mean, this is one that definitely hits in my wheelhouse. It's a Nicaraguan Puro. It's produced in the AJ Fernandez factory. For everybody out there who listens, they know how much of an AJ fan that I am, along with a bunch of other people at the shop. AJ could literally probably wrap a twig in a leaf, and I would somehow say, oh no, I definitely love it. That is one of my top 10. Like he can do in my eyes, and a lot of other people, he can do no wrong. And this is one that definitely that hits everything that I'm looking for. So this is really, really good. I'm so glad that you said this instead of like a Rocky Patel or something.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good one. I'm like you. I'm a big AJ fan. Yeah. Everything he produces is great. I'll try anything he makes.
Oh yeah. I mean, he does spice just enough where like it's coming to the mm-hmm. party, but it's not going to like ruin the party. So he does the cigars just so well. So let's do more about the cigar side of you. So you said you took like a little sabbatical on it, but you came back around during the pandemic, and that seemed to be like what a lot of people did, because we had a revitalization in the cigar, you know, business and culture, you know, during that time where more people were coming to the shops and bringing it in.
So, my first memory of cigars is when I was a kid, and my grandfather, he liked cigars and he liked pipes.
Okay.
And like, I can close my eyes and picture my grandfather's basement, the pool table. I can smell the cigars and the pipes. I tell you what, I had a cigar one time. It was I'm not a big like flavor cigar, but it was a Fat Bottom Betty.
Oh yeah.
And so like that one in particular makes me think of my grandfather's basement.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird, but so I was around him then, freshman in college. I had a friend who worked at a cigar store, and you know, like that was like during that time, young guys, I don't feel like we're smoking a lot of cigars, mm-hmm. but I would go visit him at work. He was encouraged to try all the cigars, and not sure his friends were encouraged to try them all for free, but I tried a lot of cigars, and yeah. I didn't know how good I had it because I was probably smoking like really expensive ones.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just grabbing whatever looks good. Uh-huh. And I realized I like it. Like, it's cool. This is fun. I like smoking them, but you know, from there, occasionally, you know, maybe at a wedding, at a big event, you know, I would smoke them from time to time. But so I don't really remember like the first one I had. But I definitely know that I feel like I can almost remember everyone I've had since COVID came.
Yeah, you know, yeah,
like, the only good thing that came from COVID for me was falling in love with cigars again.
Yeah. Yeah. That seems to be the way. Yeah. So, man, having a friend in the industry, you know, in college, yeah, you didn't know the wealth that was at your feet.
Oh yeah. And so, you know, I don't know if you know much about Lexington, Kentucky, but Keeneland, mm-hmm. Lexington is the horse capital of the world.
Yeah.
So we would go to Keeneland and watch the horses, and we'd have a cigar in our hand, and you know, it was great. I was living the dream, at a young age. I didn't know how good I had it.
So, you know, we have a horse racing facility here in Arkansas in Hot Springs. And whenever we go,
Oaklawn, right?
Oaklawn. So whenever we go, I will not bet on a gray horse from Kentucky. Like if it's a gray horse from Kentucky, I don't care what the odds are. I'll put a couple bucks on it just because that's kind of like how, you know, growing up with my uncles who would always kind of sneak me away to the dog park and the horse track and everything. That's what they always did. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do that.
That's great. My grandfather had about 100 different, you know, things he would bet on. Well, he really liked to gamble, and he definitely passed that on to the generations, unfortunately.
Yeah. So do you have a home lounge or shop that you go to?
So Schwab's cigar store here in town is like you know, brick and mortar mom and pop place that I really like. Always try to support them, but Jake's Cigar Bar is literally like 2 minutes from my house.
Okay.
And it's a really cool spot. And my wife doesn't like smoking cigars, but she will go there because they make great cocktails and they make the best Bloody Mary. So, you know, she'll go there on the weekend in the morning with me, or we like to go there a lot after basketball games. So the coaches and I, Coach Gay, he didn't like cigars 2 years ago until I joined the staff, and I definitely got him into those. So we go there a lot. That's kind of my spot. If I'm not smoking there, in the wintertime, I don't smoke as much just because I really like to smoke outside.
Yeah.
Wife won't let me smoke in the house, you know, whatever, her house, her rules, happy wife, happy life.
Uh-huh.
But our deck, our back deck, friends come over all the time in the summer. Like that, I've learned also through the pandemic that it's a lot cheaper to hang out at home.
Oh yeah.
And I can sit outside and smoke cigars and drink and, you know, socialize. And, that's really fun. And then also on my front porch, I have what I call my chair. It's my chair, mm-hmm. that I sit on out front and smoke cigars on in the summertime and fall and spring. So those are my spots. I definitely smoke a lot more when the weather's nice, though.
So do you have a celebration stick, or is the aging room your go-to, or do you have a certain one? Like, all right, we win state, I smoke this. We beat the city rival or whatever. What's your go-to on that?
Yeah, I've got a few Cubans stored away that are kind of, I don't know when I'm going to smoke them.
Yeah.
I've gotten several of them as a gift. I mean, I'm not like a snob, like, oh, Cuban, I like all cigars. But I definitely have a few special ones that I do have, for some big moments, but this one's probably my favorite. I tell you, I like all Padron cigars. I'm a big fan of those. I tell you a cigar I really like that to me is a really good, like, everyday stick, the Alec Bradley Project 40.
Okay. Yeah.
It's like under $6 anywhere I go. Mm-hmm. And that's another one. I've never had it. They always burn real, real well. I like it. And for just like a cheap stick, I think it's a real good one. There's a lot of different ones I like. I know, you know, like we said, AJ, anything he makes. I like the JC Newman, Julius Caesar.
Oh, top three right there. Top three all time for me.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of that one. That would probably be one that if we win, when I go to Jake's, I'm reaching for that one, more times than not. Aladino. I like those.
Yeah. I've just recently been turned on to those. Those are solid.
Yeah. I really like those. McAuliffe, I'm a McAuliffe guy. I kind of like some of those, but you know, there are not too many cigars I haven't enjoyed.
Yeah. Yeah. I can probably count on one hand the ones that I just like, whatever, because you know, in my role, we have to smoke everything new that comes in. Yeah. I'm not going to like everything, but I can, you know, respect things that, you know, a lot of people probably wouldn't, but I can find something in damn near everything that I'll enjoy something. But you know, for the most part, I, you know, you and I on this one, same palate wise, like this is definitely in my wheelhouse.
Oh yeah. Big fan.
So,
and I'm at the point, you know, if I don't like a cigar, you know what, I'm just going to put it down and find one. Pick up another one.
Worth it. Yeah. Don't need to like choke your way through it to have it. Just smoke something you actually do enjoy and everything. So, what's your most, you know, memorable cigar, either the cigar or the experience?
So I'm a big, experience guy. Like sometimes I'll smoke a cigar and I say later on or the next day, is that cigar really that good? Or was it because of, you know, the good mood I was in?
Yeah.
Like, again, I'll try it again. but like, I remember certain cigars. I remember smoking a Nub, just mm-hmm. like a Connecticut Nub cigar on the way to the golf course when I shot like the best round I've shot. And I know I was playing with my father-in-law. And, you know, I beat his ass and I will not forget that cigar. And it's almost like a routine now. Like if I'm going to play golf, I'm going to get me a Nub and smoke it on the way.
Yeah.
And just for good luck.
Not superstitious, you know, just enough.
Yeah. Hey, my father-in-law's a great guy too, but I love to beat him on the golf course. That's one of those that I really, you know, I remember. And then, you know, you and I have talked a little bit about a player of mine, Michael Wade, who was murdered about a year and a half ago. And there's a couple cigars that the cigar that I was smoking the night before that happened. Like I remember it. It was like the greatest. It was a Henry Clay Warhawk. It wasn't anything like, you know, crazy special. I just remember that weekend, we did a bunch of work at the house, like outside.
Yeah.
And I'm not like a Lowe's guy. Like, I don't know. I can't fix anything. I'm the worst with tools.
Yeah.
But like, we did a bunch of stuff around the house that weekend. And it was like, I felt so accomplished, and I'm smoking this cigar, and like, life was so good.
Yeah.
And literally the next day, like, my life gets flipped upside down. But I'll never forget, you know, smoking that cigar. I can close my eyes and picture it right now. Just kind of sometimes wish I was there again.
Yeah. Have you been able to go back and smoke that one again, or have you just not even touched it again?
I have. I actually went to Henry Clay High School. That's okay. Another school here in town. And anytime we beat Henry Clay, I always smoke one of those cigars for them. But definitely it's a memory that, you know, it's one of those just bittersweet memories.
Yeah. You know, and that kind of gets me to my last cigar question. You know, when such a traumatic experience like that happens in your community, I kind of figure you might have to lean on the cigar culture and the community itself. So what does this community and establishment mean to you?
Yeah. So when that happened, when that event took place, I couldn't light one up for like a few days. I really couldn't do anything. And you know, it was the community and my friends and family are amazing. And a lot of my friends have picked up cigars since then, and kind of like a fellowship or just being there for each other. You know, we'll smoke together and hang out. But you know, it's something that you can smoke cigars with somebody that you are nothing like, mm-hmm. look nothing like, really have no interest. You know, when you're smoking a cigar, you don't care if they're Republican, Democrat, you know, white, black, brown, you know, purple, if they pray to, you know, Jesus, Allah, the brass monkey, you know, nobody cares. Like, mm-hmm. you're in your own world. You're smoking that stick and you're just bonding with somebody. And I've kind of found that when I'm smoking a cigar, I'm the nicest version of myself, mm-hmm. that I can be. And I'm like the most emotional version of myself. Like the text, I'll sit there and smoke by myself, and I'll send text messages to people that I haven't talked to in a while to check on them. I don't know how to describe it, but just it's something about it. It's so relaxing to me. I rip and run all day, every day. I got 3 kids, of my own. And then I got a whole slew of kids that I treat as my own and call my own, yeah. and would do anything for. You know, I got a wife, I got a job that's somewhat stressful at times, and coaching, and my daughter's in dance, and my youngest son plays. We don't have a whole lot of free time.
Yeah.
But the time, like when I'm smoking a cigar, is just so amazing. It's like my thing.
Yeah.
And I love sharing it with other people too. So that's been a pretty big thing. Like the cigar community, I think, is just, it's one of those things you can smoke with anybody and you can just really enjoy it.
Yeah, no, I totally agree, because, you know, one of the things I say is, you know, working at a shop, you know, no matter who you are outside those walls, inside, mm-hmm. inside the lounge, you're a cigar smoker first. That's the first and foremost. You might have differences, you might have commonalities, but there's a guaranteed one commonality, and that's, you know, the brotherhood and sisterhood of the leaf. And that's at that moment in time, that's kind of all that matters. And like the way you described it, I'm kind of the same way, where, you know, I almost kind of take cigars for granted because I am, you know, around them so much and so often. But every time I do have one, what I say is that it brings me back to zero. Like, it takes me back mm-hmm. to even keel, no matter how much of a shitty day I've had, either inside these walls, outside these walls, you know, wherever, you know, at that moment in time, I can put the headphones in, light something up, and then mm-hmm. I'm back to even kill. And then, you know, if there's issues, I'll hit them head on when I'm done with the cigar.
Right. Right. Absolutely, man. It's just, I don't know. It's something about it. Just like you said, bring you back to that. I like the way you said that. It just really evens you out and brings you back and kind of like a restart.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what it is. Yeah. It's the old NES. It's the reset button. It's not the power down button. Yeah. It's just the reset. Like, you don't want to turn it off. You just want to start from the beginning again.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you have an older boy. You said he's in high school, correct?
Yeah. So, yeah. He's 17. He's a junior in high school.
So do you already have like a cigar set to the side that you'll share at one point together?
You know, that's a great question. I can't wait. I think about that all the time. He's already kind of like a best friend. He's actually my stepson, and he's been in my life since he was two. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, being a step parent, it's like one of those things. Like, I don't really consider him my stepson. Yeah. Like, he's my kid, you know, he's my son, but you definitely go through highs and lows with that. And your relationship kind of, it can be tough at times. And then it's times you get to be like the good guy. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I can use that to my advantage. I'll play stepdad. Okay. I can play that side too. But right now, like, we're probably closer than we've ever been. And, as he gets older, it's kind of cool. It's kind of cool. He's got a lot of my wife says he's got all my bad traits, but, I think she's just a little tough on us, Yeah. But no, I love seeing him grow up, and I definitely am picturing us, sitting on the golf course and smoking cigars together, and it'll really be here before you know it.
Yeah. That'll be something to look forward to. So let's get into the meat of this show, and everything. So what, you're a basketball coach, and that entails more than coaching the game. You're coaching up students. Like, I remember all my coaches from football, wrestling, all that kind of stuff. Like, they teach you the mm-hmm. sport, they teach you the game, but they teach you other things involved with life, with goals, with everything involved. So what drew you into this role of mentoring and coaching?
Yeah, so I'll never forget my senior year of high school in our program. Like, the team had like a program that they passed out every game or whatever, and had like a senior bio, and it said, what do you want to do when you grow up or something like that. And on mine, I put, I either wanted to be a high school basketball coach or be a professional wrestler, just being a smart ass or whatever. And which is kind of true. And my coach stopped me and he said, which one is it? Just one random day at practice. I said, I don't know what you're talking about, coach. He said, which one is it? You want to be a wrestler or you want to be a basketball coach? I said, this is going to determine the rest of my life. And I said, I want to be a coach. And he said, you should join our staff when you're in college. And it was like the first time, I always said I wanted to be one, but I was like, whoa, all right, this might be real.
Yeah.
And I definitely jumped at it, and I started coaching when I was 19, and I'm coaching guys that I played with in high school, like some of the younger guys. And those first few years, you just do all the dirty work. This is before technology. Nowadays, these young assistants have it made. You can just text somebody. They can shoot you game film within 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And used to be, I'd have to skip my college classes to drive across the state to pick up film on an opponent, mm-hmm. Which I did a little too often. That's probably why I was in college for 8 years. I just really enjoyed the game, but more so than coaching X's and O's for me, it's always just been people. I've coached for, 21 years, something like that. And I always say I'm not the best X and O coach. I'm not the best at like individual improvement drills and stuff, but I do think you're not going to find a coach that cares more about his kids than me. And that's kind of like my thing. And mm-hmm. That goes for coaching, and it goes for my job at Bryan Station, where I'm the dean of students. I care about the kids, and I want to show them that I believe in them and show them that I love them. And I tell them I love them. That's one thing that is big with me is every time I talk to one of my players, when we leave, I tell them I love them. And I do the same thing with the students at school. And I coach one of my roles at Taze Creek, I coach the freshman team. And we have a few middle school kids that played up this year. They're pretty talented kids that played up, but they hadn't really experienced the high school experience before. And, you know, they hear me telling all these kids, I love you. They're like, Coach, you always say I love you. I was like, it's because I mean it. And they're like, they're family to me. I always say, if you play for me, you're family. And these kids have an open invite to my house. They come over all the time. They play with my 9-year old. My 9-year old, if you don't follow him on Instagram, you should, because he's hilarious. Little Mill Bordas. He thinks he's one of them. Like he thinks he's 17. You cannot tell him otherwise. And he thinks they're all his brothers. Yeah. And one of my favorite things is because, you know, black, white, he doesn't care. Like, you're his brother. He loves you. And that's just how we are. My wife, she's the same way. Like, she's a saint. Like, to put up with me, we've been married like almost 15 years, and I don't know how she's put up with me the whole time. I definitely outkicked my coverage. but, you know, she'll cook for these kids. She'll help them with homework. You know, it's like you just never know who's going to be here, who's going to show up. I might be taking a nap, and all of a sudden the door opens and three guys come in, like our players. And yeah, come on in. You hungry? You know, well, it's just a family. And so that's my thing with coaching. The thing I love the most about it is just building the relationships and just being there for these kids. And some of them really need you, more than others, you know. So, some of them come from different backgrounds, and that's my thing. It's all about relationships with me.
So in Lexington, Kentucky, you know, that's the blue bloods of, you know, basketball region. You know, I'm a Jayhawk. I'll just go ahead and say that right now. I'm KU. But you know, was there any coaches, you know, while you're playing either the collegiate level that you looked up to and you're like, okay, I want to take aspects of that and kind of mold it into your own? Like who was, you know, who imprinted their capabilities and their mentorship on you?
Yeah. So on the college level, believe it or not, I'm a Duke fan, which there's not too many Duke fans in Lexington, Kentucky, but when I was a little guy, when I was like my son's age, when I was Miller's age, I liked everybody. If I was a bandwagon, I had Kansas shirts. I had Carolina, Duke. If you were in the Final Four, my dad would buy me a t-shirt of that team.
Yeah.
And if they were winning, I had that t-shirt on. so during that time, when I'm falling in love with basketball, Duke was really good.
Yeah.
And I really became a big fan of them, their players, and Coach K. And when I started coaching, I went to a coaching clinic, one of those Nike coaching clinics. I got to actually listen to Coach K speak, and I got to meet him and became an even bigger Duke fan. And then, believe it or not, one of my good friends is a guy who, he's like my dad's age. He actually worked for Duke Radio. And his name is Matthew Lawrence. He was actually in 90210. I always mess with him about that too. Like, he was an actor in 90210. And he became a radio personality for Duke Radio. So he moves to Lexington and finds me, you know, the only other Duke fan in town. And he's been great to me. And we've gone to Cameron a couple times, and he got me tickets to take my boys to watch Duke play. And, meet Coach K. I'll never forget going to one game with Matthew, and afterwards we're talking to Coach K in his office. You know, he's got like his gold medals sitting there and stuff. And he's like, "Hey, thanks for coming." Like, he's telling me, "Thanks for coming." I'm like, "Oh, don't worry about it, Coach. Don't worry. You know, you need anything else, let me know. You want me to draw you up an OB play?"
Yeah.
but he's like, he's my college guy that I always followed. And then the guy that I played for, in high school, Kirk Childs, he's a, you know, kind of like a local legend. He's won like over 600 games and he's a Hall of Fame coach. He's the one that got me into coaching. He was the one on the local level that was definitely a mentor and got me started in my career.
Is he the one that asked you which one, coach or wrestler?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Which one? Sometimes I regret that because I do think I'd be a great wrestler.
Okay. If you're going wrestler, would you be heel or would you be good guy?
Oh, I'd be a heel 100%. I mean, Ric Flair is like my hero. Like, let's be real. Oh, for sure.
So we've got a regular that comes in here, and he tours like the small like southern circuits of wrestling and everything. Yeah. And like 2 years ago, he did a match with Jerry Lawler where he wrestled him.
Oh, wow.
And he was like, and I mean, he's younger. He was, you know, mid 20s or so at the time, but he was just ecstatic just to be in the same ring with him. And then he was showing me pictures and everything. And, you know, and
that's great.
He's one of the ultra heels. So just going up against, you know, one of the world's most famous heels too at the same time. I mean, I can see that.
I tell you, it's a funny thing, pro wrestling. So I had never listened to podcasts. And then just like with these cigars during this, this COVID era, I guess you'd say, my wife is like, you should listen to some of these podcasts. So I find the wrestling podcast. That's the first one I find. And I'm listening to these wrestling podcasts and I'm like, well, okay, what else can I find? And then that's how I actually found you and, your podcast. So I'm going to look for some cigar podcasts and, you know, found you guys and been listening for the last few years. So kind of cool how it all worked out.
Yeah. That's awesome. I appreciate that. That's cool. Yeah, there's one podcast that I don't know if it's a podcast, more of like a YouTube show, but it's Stone Cold, and he brings on all the all the guys. Yeah. I think it's like the Broken Glass or Broken something, but like just hearing the back.
Broken Skull.
Yeah, Broken Skull. But just like hearing all those stories and stuff and how they just kind of, you know, look past the facade and just the kinships that they created. And like one of the first books that I read that I made me fall in love with books was Mick Foley's the first biography.
Absolutely.
The story that got me hooked was the one, it was like him and Dallas Page like crumbled up a bunch of cookies into Steve's bed. And like it was late at night and he got into bed and he was just furious and like throwing like pillows and throwing the bed everywhere because it was after a big match and he just wanted to go to sleep and there was just crumbs all over his bed. And I was like, this is like, if you look past the, you know, is wrestling real, is it fake or whatever, but just hearing the stories involved and just the brotherhood that was created with those, you know, I can see just how it is. It's almost a thicker than blood kind of situation.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It's great. I love listening to the old stories. And then I also think it's something about it. It, you know, you reminisce and think about when you were a kid, takes you back to those times when everything was so simple.
Yeah, definitely.
I love it. Yeah,
definitely. So, you know, what challenges do you face as, you know, not only the dean of students, but also as in the coaching realm? You know, you have, let's just say you have 20 players on a team. You know, you have 20 different identities. You have 20 different personalities. You have 20 different family dynamics and situations. You know, what tools do you use to get the best out of not only those students, but also the students that don't play for you, but are in the same high school? Like what can you tell people out there, or what are some guidelines, and what are some paths that, you know, you can, you know, attribute your knowledge to?
Yeah. So I think it really comes down to getting to know, you know, all the kids and to understand what's going on in their life outside of basketball or outside of school, and really finding out, you know, what they have going on at home, what they're interested in, and what drives them. And it's different for everybody, just like it is for you and me. You know, these kids, on the basketball court. Some of them, you know, you can get on, you can yell at, you can, you know, really motivate that way. Mm-hmm. And then there's other kids that just need to be loved up more. Mm-hmm. And you got to be super positive with and, you know, motivate them that way. But they're all so different. Like you said, it really just comes down to getting to know them. And you can't just say it's not cookie cutter. And I think that's probably another reason why I'm not like, I'm not just so into the X and O's in basketball. They talk about positionless basketball, like not being he's a one. Well, he's a two. He's a point guard. Mm-hmm. Well, no, I you're a basketball player first. Yeah. And before you're a basketball player, you're a human being. And you got to know, you know, who they are really. And when you find out who they are and you find out what drives them, I think you kind of have a better understanding of what you can do as a coach to get the most out of them. And it's not any different, you know, as my role of dean of students. I mean, I'm a mentor first. At my school, I handle most of the discipline, which, you know, you would think you probably don't make a lot of friends doing that. I'm the one that's given the suspensions. I'm the one that's, you know, issuing consequences, calling home when they're in trouble. But what I try to do is also call home when they do something good. Call home and get to know mom and dad. Mm-hmm. And one thing I do that the district probably doesn't want me to is I give my cell phone out to every parent that I come in contact with, and let them know that if they have an issue, they can call me. And some of them will call and text, you know, after hours and stuff. Yeah. And players and students too, you know, students, they follow me on Instagram or Twitter, and, you know, they'll, you know, reach out and, you know, they've come to my son's basketball games and stuff, and they support in that way. And, you just get to know each other. And, you know, yeah, you got to keep a fine line of professionalism and, you know, getting personal, but I don't think it's that hard to do. Yeah. But when people know you care about them, I think you can get a lot more out of them.
Yeah.
And they can reach their potential when they know they have somebody in their corner fighting for them. So that's one thing my guys always know is they got somebody that's on their side. And I always tell the players, you know, they're not perfect. I'm not perfect. And they're going to make bad decisions. So I tell them, if you're ever in a situation you don't need to be in, call me. You know, you don't have to give me the details. Hey, coach, I'm in a situation I don't need to be in. Can you come pick me up?
Yeah.
And they have utilized that before and, you know, use me as an excuse. You know, you don't want to do something, you know, use me and I'll come pick you up and you come spend the night at my house and, or I'll take you home or do whatever I need to do. And I don't know, that's a big key to me is just getting to know the kids, knowing what's going on in their everyday life and seeing how you can help out.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's like, you know, what you said, you know, you can't use a cookie cutter formula for, you know, multiple kids throughout every realm, you know, boy, girl, whatever. Everybody has their own individuality and issues. And, you know, and like, I like what you said, you know, you have to, you know, you have to be the one in charge of discipline, but you also get to be in charge of the praise, you know, when it's needed.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's one of those things where, you know, I went to 12 different schools during my tenure.
Oh, wow.
We moved a lot, whether in the county or moved from, you know, Kansas City to Arkansas, but, you know, I didn't really have anybody really in that dynamic that I mm-hmm. could count on. I was not a loner kid, but I was very, you know, introverted. I had my small core group of friends. I never got in trouble. You know, I was in two fights my whole, you know, school career, got my ass whooped both times. You know, it's just not, you know, it wasn't a lot of stuff. It was just, you know, sometimes my mouth will get me in trouble. And I've learned that even in adulthood.
Yeah. But, hey, me too.
but yeah, you know, it's nice to know, you know, from a student who is younger that they have, you know, a landing pad to fall back on if it's needed. And a lot of times, you know, even now I'm stubborn. I don't like asking for help. I won't ask for help. I'll try to do it myself. But you know, whenever somebody is in your life, you know, and they can take that accountability, knowing that, you know, somebody will be there for them. It's one of those things in the back of their mind. I can see how, you know what, I can get out of this situation, or I have somebody to, you know, hold my hand through this to help me through whatever situation, you know, that they're going through. So I commend you on that. And that's, you know, that's good for the next generation coming up, because, you know, no telling what the future holds. But it's, you know, it's people who are our age, where we're not young, but we're not old. We're in that middle,
right,
in that middle ground where, you know, it's our duty to shape the future ahead, but it's also, you know, we don't want to just totally push them. You know, they have to make their own path, but we can show them which way, you know, you're gonna mess up. That's a part of life.
Oh, yeah.
And messing up is, I'm glad that I did all the stuff that I did, you know, I didn't make it.
Yeah, you learn from.
Yeah, you need that. But having somebody, you know, to pick you up and to brush you off, you know, and give you a pat on the ass and be like, all right, let's do it again kind of thing.
Yeah. And, you know, I work with one of my coworkers. He always jokes. He said it amazes him that I'll suspend somebody, and when I'm walking them out the front door to meet their parents, you know, they'll give me a hug on the way out, you know. Now, it doesn't always go that way, you know.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it starts with, you know, them cussing me walking out the front door. But those are the ones I make sure, like, that's even a challenge. Like, you're going to love me. And I always say I love the ones that are hard to love.
Yeah.
And I'm hard to love at times. You know, I'm stubborn. And we may bump heads because of me. It may be me that's stubborn and you know, acting like a kid sometimes when I'm interacting. But one thing I'm going to do is give you a second chance and keep picking you up when you make a mistake. And it's like the most rewarding is when you got a kid who keeps making, you know, the wrong choice, the wrong decision, and then you watch them grow.
Yeah.
And then when you see them walk across that stage and they graduate, you know, it's like the best feeling in the world to say, you know, hey, you remember what a turd you were?
Yeah.
You know, freshman year, like, look how far you've come.
Yeah.
And I just a quick example. There was a kid, I was a head coach at a surrounding county here in Kentucky. And it was a kid who, he was like on the border. Like, he couldn't decide if he was going to be an athlete or if he was going to be a gang member. And I always told him he had superpowers and he could use them for good or evil. And he chose to use them for good in the end. And it's one of those situations. Now he owns his own concrete company. And what didn't hesitate at all. When I needed something done here at the house, like some concrete done, I called him. He came out, did a phenomenal job. And, you know, we sat and talked about that, you know, early on, how he was on the wrong path and he got it together and look what he's doing now, you know, now he's helping me. So it's great when it comes full circle like that.
Yeah. That was the next thing I was going to ask, you know, not only do you, in your role, you teach students and you teach kids and you teach everything, but they've also had to have teach some things to you. So what are some lessons that you've learned from, you know, the generation coming up?
Yeah, that, you know, they've taught that. That's one thing they've taught me a lot. And I always say that they've taught me to kind of, I'm an emotional guy. All right. Like I'm an emotional guy. If you play basketball, laugh, scream and yell, you know, you've seen all the emotions out of me. And one thing they do is kind of even me out a little bit. Okay. And, just kind of show me that when everything else is going, my wife loves saying this, like when everything else is going crazy, when everybody else is losing their head, if you can keep yours, then that's when, you know, you can be successful. And that's one of those things that I kind of see some of these kids go through a lot more than I have to go through. And if they can make it and they can keep going every day and keep surviving, then why can't I? And yeah. We talk about our own kids, how spoiled they are. And, you know, it's good and bad. I mean, I'm glad they have everything they want, but sometimes they sit and look at the pantry and say, we have nothing to eat. Mm-hmm. And I want to go strangle them, right? You know, like we've got so much groceries there at that. Like, what do you mean we got nothing to eat?
Yeah.
You know, I'm always, you know what some kids have at home? Yeah. And, but they don't know any better. Mm-hmm. You know, your knowledge is what you've experienced.
Yeah.
And if that's all you've experienced, then you don't know. So they've definitely opened my eyes up and I see life from a different point of view. Now I can see it from all different points of view. And I don't know. I also think they keep me young. Like I said, that's one thing. I don't want to grow up ever. Yeah. Like I just don't. Like I'm a kid.
Yeah.
Like it is what it is. I love doing what I'm doing because I get to interact with the kids.
Yeah.
And a lot of people keep getting promoted in the education world. And the more you get promoted, it's like the further away from the kids you get. Mm-hmm. And like you get the central office job making twice as much as I do probably, but you don't get to see the kids.
Yeah.
And that's the thing for me. They keep me young. They keep me on my toes. They keep me current. You know, I feel like I know for the most part,
yeah.
You know, all the hip stuff going on, you know, but I don't know. I love it. I love what I do. Like I said, it can be challenging at times, but it's definitely rewarding. I can't imagine doing anything else.
I bet you some of those kids could have got our technological problems fixed in about a couple minutes that we had, an hour ago.
There is no doubt. There is no doubt. If I have a problem in school, I don't go to an adult like with technology. I go to a student.
Yeah, no,
I one of my kids. That's actually what I did. We were having trouble here right before we got logged on. I ran upstairs. Maddox, what do I do? To my oldest son. He looks at me like I'm an idiot. He's like, oh my gosh.
No, I totally get with that. You know, one of the things that I've heard before, I don't know who I heard it from, but I've always attributed it, you know, to grow into a strong tree, that one of that first layers is a layer of shit. You know, you got to have that manure down, but then through all that shit and all that everything, you grow to be a flower or the biggest sequoia out there. So you know, we've all got to go through it. Sometimes the layer is a little bit different, but we all have to go through it.
Yeah. I like that. That's spot on. I like that. And like with the basketball, you know, you learn more from a loss than you do from a win.
Yeah.
You know, that's usually when you go back to the drawing board and you know, you figure it out.
Yeah. So, well, let's talk about this cigar real quick before we, you know, carry on. You know, I haven't had this one in a while. It's been probably well into a year, and I regret not having it sooner than this because this thing is just fire. I can see why this is, you know, on the top of your list.
Yeah, I just think it's got like you said, like it's got the right amount of spiciness. It's definitely bold enough, you know, where you know you're smoking something, but it's not too much. I think they always, like one thing for me, like they always burn so well. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know if that's just like in my head or what, but like, I just feel like, you know, you got a good stick when it's just burning so well.
Oh yeah.
And that's how mine always are with these.
Yeah. The construction on these are always top tier. I think one small light up that I've had to do just because, you know, start talking and everything. I've had to relight more cigars on the show just because, you know, we talk for, you know, 20 minutes at a time without smoking anything.
Yeah.
But, yeah, this is, you know, this is top all the way through. So let's get into, you know, a more of a touching subject. In August of 2020, you know, you said your life was turned upside down, you know, with the senseless murder of, you know, somebody who, you know, you considered part of your family, part of your team, you know, somebody who was about to start college at Louisville on an academic scholarship and everything. Talk about him, say the name, say what, you know, that senseless act caused to bring, you know, the students, the family, the community together as a whole.
Yeah. So August of 2020, Michael Wade, who I call Kel, everybody called Kel. I touched on my basketball players are like family, but he was even more like family. The school I coach at, you know, my wife's the assistant principal. Well, Kel had some other siblings come through Tate's Creek as well. And my wife knew them pretty well too. So I start coaching at Tate's Creek and it's Kel's senior year. And almost instantly I was like drawn to him. In the preseason, we do workouts, we do conditioning, and we do, you know, some pickup ball and stuff. And it seemed like Kel, whatever team he was on, they would win. And he wasn't like a D1 player. He was like a 6'4" post player who was gritty. You know, he was tough. So whatever team he was on, they were winning in the preseason. And I told my wife, I was like, something about this kid I really like. And before you knew it, he was spending more and more time with us, coming home from practice, you know, or I would give him rides home from practice, take him to practice. You know, if we go on a away trip, he's always riding with me. And then that turned into, instead of taking him home, sometimes, hey, you know, come stay with us if you want. So his senior year, I mean, he would stay at our house, you know, 4 or 5 days a week. He was constantly at the house. Sleep on the couch, sleep in the basement, whatever. And just became part of the family. My youngest son, Miller, that I mentioned at the time, he was playing in a little basketball league that they played every Saturday morning. I coached them and Kel would come to every game and help me coach. And, I mean, he would not miss a game. And he became, you know, Miller's favorite player instantly. They got really close. My wife, you know, she's with him at school all day. If he has a problem, he goes and sees Miss Bordis. And then after school, he's at practice with me and then comes home and spending time with us. So we got super close. During the course of the year, you know, he's really doing well academically. He's working with my wife, trying to go to college. He thought about playing college ball. He probably could have played a few places, but then he decided, you know, I just want to be a student. He wanted to major in business. So, you know, he would work with my wife on getting grants and scholarships. And before you know it, he's got a full ride to the University of Louisville. You know, had a really good ACT score. Grades were good. Everything was going well for him. He had a job. Basketball season's over. He graduates. And that summer, you know, everything's looking good. August 15th, yeah, he moves into the University of Louisville. And that day, I remember my wife's parents were in town, and I was beating my father-in-law's ass on the golf course, you know, like I said.
Yeah.
And loving every minute of that. And I'll never forget the last text he sent me, about, you know, hey, I love you guys, you know, starting school tomorrow. I love you guys. And of course we sent him some, I think my thing was leave the girls alone and make sure you go to class every day. That was like my words of wisdom to him, you know?
Yeah.
And, throughout the day, he FaceTimed my wife a lot, like trying to make sure he knew, what he was doing as far as his registration and getting in the dorm. And he sent a text that night at 10:30 at night, you know, just to my wife saying, love you guys. And I will, I'll call you tomorrow and show you my room. You know, we plan on going up there and taking him out to dinner and stuff. And then at about 2 o'clock in the morning, so then it's August 16th. So at 2 o'clock in the morning, my at the time he was seven, my 7 year old, who he happened to still be awake playing video games at 2 in the morning, little sneaky ass. You know, it's summertime. I do little, he's the third child. Let me just say he gets away with whatever.
Oh yeah. Oh,
like
yeah.
If you've seen the kid, like he literally gets away with whatever. He just smiles at you. Okay, do whatever. So my older son, had spent the night out with a friend and, another kid that I look at like a son, Kobe, he stays with us quite a bit too. Great kid, comes from a great family. He wasn't at our house either. So we're asleep and Mill comes in at 2 in the morning with his iPad and tells me, hey, Maddox, my oldest son, he's on the phone. He says he needs to talk to you. And, you know, that's weird. So sit up and look at my phone. I've got 10 missed calls. And, you know, Maddox tells me, hey, something happened to Kel. He got shot. I think he's dead. So we both sit up, my wife and I in bed and like, what? And my wife's phone rings immediately and it's Kel's sister and she delivers the same message. So immediately hop up, go and pick up Maddox and Kobe. And, we ride out to, this hotel that apparently there was a party at this hotel. Kel, he moved into Louisville that day. He forgot his ID, you know, like kids do. Mm-hmm. He comes back to Lexington to get his ID, and then he decides he's going to go out to this hotel and say goodbye to a few more friends where this party's taking place. And while he's there, there's a drive-by shooting that Kel was not the intended target. Like most of these shootings, at least in Kentucky and Lexington, that have happened in the last few years, these shootings, some innocent person gets hit and it is not the intended target. And that night happened to be Kel. And he gets hit with a couple bullets and he didn't make it. And so we go out there, you know, to the scene and first person I see is his mom, Kel's mom. And I'll never forget. She came straight to me and gave me a hug. And here in this state where, you know, she's just lost her son. She looks at me and I'll never forget. She said, the first person I thought of was your wife, because as close as me and Kel were, and we were close. I mean, like he's like a son. My wife and him were probably even closer. And, I'm just like, I'm crushed, you know, I'm shell shocked. You know, fast forward, we're a year and a half from that situation, right now, the killers are still not behind bars. It's been a weird case. They did arrest three guys. They arrested three guys and had a witness. And I guess the Commonwealth attorney decided there wasn't enough evidence in the case. And they set the guys free. And they, you know, they're asking for help in the case. They're wanting more evidence. They're wanting more people to speak out. And, you know, it's one of those situations where not a lot of people are talking. And you can break that down into, you can break it down into several different paths. A lot of people in the community don't trust police. So they're not, it's just kind of one of those things. They're not talking. Mm-hmm. A lot of people honestly, you know, they would rather handle things themselves.
Yeah.
And so, you know, maybe some people know and they don't want to talk. Well, as we know, handling it yourself isn't going to work out.
Yeah.
Because it's just going to lead to more heartbreak and, you know, retaliation or whatnot. And, you know, whatever, but everybody's handling it differently. And right now we're searching for answers. We're searching for justice. Kel's Nana, who's one of the greatest women in the world, Andre Washington, she's kind of teamed up with us, and you know, we're all trying to find some answers. Bluegrass Crime Stoppers is an organization that, you know, will pay out for anonymous tips that lead to arrests. And we've kind of reached out to that organization and partnered with them, trying to find some answers. I talk with some of the police officers on the case daily, looking for answers. Especially early on, we were literally on the phone daily, looking for any answer we could come up with. And, you know, we stay in touch, and just, it's a terrible, senseless tragedy that, you know, you keep asking why, and, you know, you just pray every day for justice. So that's kind of the, you know, the summary of the story, but it's something that has really affected my family and a lot of families in the community. Kel was a kid that he knew everybody, and everybody knew him. And, I always say he kind of reminds me of Miller, my youngest son, because Miller knows everybody just being around all these older kids. And that's kind of how Kel was. Like when he was younger, he had these older brothers and cousins and grew up, and everybody loved him. And, so you got a big group of people who were just missing him every single day and just, really struggling with this loss. So it's something that's really been tough.
Yeah. I mean, it was that post that you made on Instagram about the news clip, that you were on, and was it his grandma, or was that his mom?
Yeah. This is grandma. He calls her Nana.
It was that news clip, that I watched, and I was like, you know what? I need to actually, you know, reach out to him, get him on this platform for this type of show. You know, I sent it to my wife, Mo, over here. And I was like, hey, watch this. And she watched it, and she didn't know what to take of it first. And then I was like, I'm going to have him on, and this is going to be the next leadership, you know, show that we're going to do, because I, you know, it's that situation that not a lot of people that I know personally have gone through. But it's something that needs to be out there known. That, you know,
right,
like you said, you know, it's injustice. It's, you know, nobody should have to go through that in any aspect. You know, you don't want the vigilante aspect coming around,
right?
But like you said, wrong place, wrong time. You know, had the whole world ahead, and just, you know, forgetting an ID and then stopping to say goodbye to friends. You know, and then something like that happened. So after seeing that news article, and then I dove in a little deeper, watching other news articles and reading more, that's why I was like, you know what, I've got to reach out. I got to reach out to this coach to be like, all right, let's set something up and do this.
And I really appreciate it, because, you know, that was one thing that when it first happened, you know, I made a lot of, I'm a big experience guy. I'm a big memory guy. I'm a big picture guy. Like, everybody always jokes about it. Like, you always want to take a picture. And that's what Kel always said. He's, you always want to take a picture. And, I do. I don't know. It's just, it is what it is. I remember when I was a kid, I didn't like autographs, but if I saw a famous celebrity, I wanted to get a picture with them. Yeah. And that's been one of those things, you know, I posted a lot of stuff on social media, and it's probably one of the ways I grieve is looking through the pictures. It's remembering that stuff, like remembering the good times. And then the other reason is I want to keep his name out there and keep it going. I want some justice, and I'm not going to let, you know, let him be forgotten. And so when this first happened, a lot of news people would reach out, and you kind of could tell which people from the news really cared and which ones just kind of wanted a story, you know, story, yeah. And like the ones that really cared, I wanted to talk to. And one of the reasons was we wanted to get our story out. Like we wanted to show everybody who Kale was. Yeah. We didn't want it to be, oh, you know, it's another young black man that was murdered, mm-hmm. and everybody just think whatever they think, yeah. you know, like yeah. to come up with their own story. Like,
yeah.
no, this was a really special kid who had everything going for him and was loved by so many people. And we wanted everybody to know who he was. And one thing that has happened is we've gotten really close with his family. You know, we talk every day with his family, his mom, his Nana, his brothers and sisters and cousins. And, yeah, we're super tight. And, I actually said, you know, I got to speak at the funeral. I said, if you remember August, 2020, a lot of the racial injustice stuff going on in the country, and the country was almost kind of divided. Mm-hmm. And I spoke and I said, you know, right now, it's 2020 when the country is divided like this, and this has brought a white family and a black family together as one. Mm-hmm. And we truly are our family, and kind of, if nothing else, maybe we'll show some people that it doesn't matter what you look like or where you come from. It's who you are that really matters. And that's a big thing with me and big thing in my house. And always will be is it does not matter what you look like. I told you, you know, Miller thinks these kids are his brothers, and that piece that you're talking about that I had on Instagram when that was on the air, we all watched it in my living room, and looking at little Mill sit there and just cry, you know, what's going on, man? You all right? And just Dad, I miss him. I just miss Kel. And every night he sleeps with Kel's towel. Like he's had like a Gatorade towel, you know, that he had at every game.
Yeah.
And he gave it to Miller, and Miller sleeps with it every single night. And we're not going to stop. We won't stop until we get some justice, and just want to keep his name out there and keep the story out there until we're able to put some people behind bars and get some justice. And it's easy to say the system doesn't work and stuff. And I understand completely why people feel that way.
Yeah.
But we're going to keep believing. And like, I talked to the police officers working the case. There were some really good guys. You know, we say we just got to keep trying every day.
Yeah.
And the head detective on the case, he told me the other day when there was another murder in Lexington. And he said, Jay, I sat in my car and cried for 10 minutes before I went into the house because I didn't want my kids just to see how upset I was, but I just don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And we just say, oh, we're going to keep fighting. We just keep trying to make a difference in people's lives.
Yeah.
It's all we know how to do.
Yeah. So what is the organization you said earlier, Bluegrass Crime Stoppers?
Yeah. Bluegrass Crime Stoppers. It's an organization here in Lexington that, they're fully funded through donations. And you know, they use the donations as reward. So you can go on there. A lot of people don't want to talk to the police. You know, they say they're not a snitch. They're not a rat. You know, that whole thing. Sure, if you were a fan like I was of, you know, mafia movies growing up and mobster movies, you know, that was the number one thing. You're not a snitch, but this is the way that you can anonymously report things, and you actually get a reward for it. That's just one avenue that we're trying to see what we can come up with, if we can get any info that will lead to an arrest.
Yeah. So I see on a lot of the posts that you post and everything, you do a certain hashtag, and it's family, but the A is a 4. I'm assuming 4 was his number.
Yeah, he was. Kel was number 4, and kind of like a nickname for him. My son Miller, that's kind of been like his thing. He said, "I always will wear the number 4 since then, and he does, and he wears it proudly. And Kobe, the kid that I mentioned earlier, who he's like a son to me, plays for us at Tate's Creek, plays AAU for us. He wears number 4 now for Tate's Creek, and we do everything we can to try to represent that and represent Kel. One thing I did, me and Kel used to always joke with my wife about tattoos. We said we were going to get each other's faces tattooed on us, and she'd always like, "No, you're not getting any more tattoos." And I said, "No, I'm getting a Mount Rushmore. If we win the state championship, I'm getting a Mount Rushmore, and it's going to be the players' faces on there." And so when Kel passed, I actually got, there's a picture. It's like my favorite picture of all my kids. And I got Kel and Kobe and Maddox, my oldest, and Miller, my youngest. I got their faces tattooed on me as in the form of Mount Rushmore for Kel. But it's just kind of just another reminder, you know, every time I look in the mirror of him, and not a day goes by that we don't talk about him and think about him and, you know, remember all the good stuff.
Yeah. No, it was when I saw that, like I said, I've been following your Instagram for a couple years now, and just seeing the bond that you've created with the players, with the students. I knew it was something that I wanted to, you know, to bring onto this platform to share out. And then specifically seeing that one post that you did, I was like, well, that's really the sign right there that I need to reach out and do this.
And I appreciate that. And like, I guess like my thing is, you know, well, I mean, I can't thank you enough. I mean, you're all the way in Arkansas, and the fact that it's reached you, I guess, speaks volumes of social media and, you know, that platform. So that's one of the reasons we want to keep that going on social media. But, you know, everybody, I just feel like can play a part, not only in Kel's situation, but in their own community. Just getting involved and helping people. And that's one thing some people always say, like, well, what can we do to help? And I just think if everybody can just get involved, and maybe you can help one person, you know, like my thing is like with leadership, it's like, if you can use your gifts to help other people, and everybody has like a different gift, right? Like, you know, you're funny, you're smart, you're talented in some aspects, but just use whatever gift you have to help people. And I told you, like, I'm not like the smartest guy in the room. I'm probably not the hardest working guy in the room, but I know people and I love people. And like, that's my thing. It's like, I'm going to keep loving people, and especially young kids. I'm going to keep putting all my energy into them, all my money into them. You know, I could hit the lottery and I'm still probably going to be living check to check, just cause that's me. Like, I'm just going to give all my stuff, to help others. And, you know, everybody's in different situations, but your love and your time is free. And if you can give that to somebody, you know, it's like that butterfly effect. Like, you don't know, you can just do one thing and it might help so many different people down the road.
Yeah. You know, definitely. And kudos to you for doing that. It's more people, in the South here. The South thing is like, we're known to have that Southern hospitality, but it's those, yeah. But it's the actions that mean more than anything. You know, it's easy to say it, it's harder to do it. So for you, for anybody else to actually do the stuff that they talk about, anybody can say anything, but when the rubber hits the road, do you have do you have what it takes to actually go through with what you mean? And just, and seeing what you've done and just talking to you here for the past hour and a half, I see that you walk that line perfectly.
Well, thanks, man. I really do appreciate it.
Yeah. And another thing too is, come Friday morning, Kel's name is going to be known in 32 countries. So you want that name out there. That name's going to be out there.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. I appreciate you using, your platform to help us out with that. It means more than you realize. It really does. It means a lot to me. It means a lot to my family. So thank you.
Well, good. So is there any other place where if somebody happens to know anything who listens to this, it might be minute, might not even happen at all, but if somebody happens to know something, where else can they reach out to do anything?
Like I say, you can always reach out to me. My Instagram, it's Coach. Well, heck, now is it Coach J Bordes 4? I think that's what it is. It's Coach J Bordes 4, the number 4. And I would love to talk to anybody that has time, energy, the means to help and to make a difference, like I said, in this case or in any other one. So definitely can reach out, and I would love to speak on it.
Awesome. Well, hopefully, this is a chapter that can be, finally put to rest. There can be closure. There can be justice. There can be pain that can be, eased finally, not only in your family, but in blood family and just community as well.
Yeah. And I could tell you, we will, when that happens, we'll light one up together, man. Your choice next time. You get to pick it.
I hear you. I guess the way to close this out, again, thanks for what you're doing for, the students, for the body as a whole. You're touching students' lives. You're touching players' lives. It's not something that you can't be seen, but there's more that you probably don't know, but it's just those little things that, those little gifts that we're given throughout lifetime, and just those people that come into, our situations where it might not be seen now, but it has lasting effects. Like you said, that butterfly effect later on down the road, where, 10, 20 years from now, somebody who you've dealt with is going to speak back to be like, man, Coach J, he helped me with this. And that is somebody who I looked up to, who helped me by the, through all this, just like how, you were helped through when you were coming up in this as well.
Yeah. And I hope that all those people know that, how much they helped me as well. And, as me and my wife always say, as much as we did to try to help Kel, he did so much more, for me and my wife. And that's the thing is, when you become close with somebody and you love them, you know, yeah, you may do stuff for them, but damn it, they're doing stuff right back to help you. And that's what really, you know, that's what means the world to you.
Yeah.
So,
well,
appreciate it, man.
No problem. So, you know, sticking with the coaching thing, I hope your team does well this season. Since you are a Duke fan, you know, Coach K is leaving, you know, there's going to be an open spot because I've always said, you don't want to be the guy after the big guy. You want to be the guy after the guy. So,
right.
Because I would not want to be the one to follow Coach K. I can tell you that right now.
It would be tough. I mean, no matter what you do, like how do you ever live up to that? Right.
I know. Like we were watching the game, the Duke North Carolina game up here, I guess last week or the week before. And, you know, with me growing up as a Jayhawk fan, you know, I grew up Roy Williams, and then I was surprised to see, I was like, oh shit. Like Roy Williams isn't the coach for North Carolina anymore.
Right.
It was jarring. It was so weird. And, you know, now it's coming to the point of next year, you know, there's going to be a whole new generation coming up that never got to see Coach K do what he did, even in the, you know, in the U.S. realm with the Olympic team. And to Duke. So, you know, we got to live in that sweet time to see what all he could do for the last, 35, 40 years before then he was at West Point. I mean, just seeing all that he's done. So.
Right. Yeah. And you know, it's going to be weird, you know, when they tip off next year, not seeing him on the sidelines. So it'll definitely be a different feel. I'm glad I got to watch him, and we actually went to the Duke Louisville game this year. Me and my youngest son did, just to definitely want to say we saw a game in his final season. But you know, maybe they cut down the nets and go out with a bang. It'd be a storybook ending.
Say we got the best time of the year is right around the corner. Got March Madness coming up.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I'm sure I saved a couple sick days for March Madness.
Yeah, that's like the key is you want to start telling people you feel a little sick at about late Monday, early Tuesday. So when the play-in game happens on Thursday, you're good to go.
Yeah, I got to tell my boss, if he's listening to this, to just go ahead and turn it off right before we get to this part right here.
Yeah, timestamp that.
You don't want to hear the endings, just ads and stuff. You don't want to hear it.
Well, Coach, I'm so glad that we could hook up and we can do this show on mentoring and leadership and get the story of Kel out there and just what not only him, but all the other students mean to you, but also what you mean to, you know, so many students and kids out there.
Well, thanks, man. Thanks for having me on. It's been a blast.
Yeah, no problem. I appreciate it. So, next week we'll be back to normal routine and everything. So we will talk to everybody next week. Later.